All right, everybody. Hello, hello, and welcome back to In Liberty and Health. This show was kind of put together last minute. I had a guest. He unfortunately canceled. I was supposed to have David Patrick Harry on, but he'll be coming on in the next few weeks. He just had something come up for him. So no big deal, no hard feelings or anything like that. I promise you this is going to be an excellent show. And I'm really, really looking forward to that conversation. It seems like you guys generally enjoy when I kind of dive into the religion topic there. So that will definitely be one of those conversations where we'll kind of like talk about red pill and religion and all that kind of stuff. So I have a date in mind. I'm just waiting for him to get back to me. So anyways, I want to give a shout out to the channel members because I just started the memberships and I got two people that signed up for memberships within the last week. So you get access to all the Common Crown performances that I record, and as well as some videos I'm probably going to try to edit and put forward. So right now I have the X3 bar review with all the accessories and stuff like that. If you join now, you can see it. If not, it'll be out on Friday. So it's $2.99 a month. I want to make it affordable for everybody so that way they can support me without having to break the bank. And if not, then obviously you still get a lot of benefit, hopefully, from this channel. But I want to make it so that way people could support me at a low cost way if they feel what I do is helping them out in any kind of way. So feel free to head over and become a member. I'd really, really appreciate it. Other than that, tigerfitness.com for all your supplements. I just got my order for their Memorial Day sale. I apologize if you missed out. It was awesome. as you can see, I got all my supplements behind me, Fox & Sons Coffee. And I want to start shouting out this because we are going to be playing this event. I talk about it all the time. It's home with some of my most fond memories. But the Rock for Life charity is where my band will be playing. There's a GoFundMe. I'll be sure to actually drop that in the chat here for Ruthie, who is the nominee for Rock for Life this year, where my drummer basically sets up a whole charity event for kids in need. So if you can, please head to that link and donate. Oh God, that came out all messed up. Anyways, go to Rock for Life and they will have the GoFundMe up there. It's on Facebook and all that stuff. I post it to my Twitter. So please check that out and donate if you have the spare cash. It's going to a great cause. And once again, it's home of some of my most fond memories and performances. And it always goes to help out these kids in need. And they really, really need it. She's suffering from Hodgkin's lymphoma. I don't remember her age exactly, but they do this stuff every year. So it's for a really, really good cause. So I'm sorry for the extended intro. Without further ado, let's get into it. Typo. Looks like it's just you and me for now.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Good, good. I feel like we were just here.
yeah, we definitely were. But I don't mind recording more content with you. It's always fun.
Nice, dude. Yeah, well, okay, here we go. Here's... hold on. He'll be here in a minute. This past week has been interesting for libertarianism and everything. And there he is. What's up, Adam?
What up?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you were able to kind of hop on last minute, and we have another guest coming on. If you look in our chat, he said that he'll be on in probably like, about like 15 minutes.
Oh, no, I don't have that.
Oh, you don't? Okay,
the
well,
guy just joined.
Okay, well, Pat will be on in a few minutes. He asked if he could join, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week for the Libertarian Party, the Liberty Movement, and libertarianism in general. I guess I want to throw it to you first, Adam, because I know you didn't get a chance to rant and rave or talk about this because, unfortunately, you were out there campaigning for our new presidential nominee, Chase Oliver.
Someone has to get the job done. By the way, worst episode to miss on Monday night. I was like, God damn it.
All right. So were you at the convention or
no?
What's up?
I had to work because they didn't book me for the comedy show. So they could go fuck themselves, honestly. So I worked that whole week, but anyway, it didn't matter.
Gotcha. Okay. So what did you hear, and did you have anybody kind of talk to you about this, and like what were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I was getting like texts and updates, you know, from like people down there and stuff like that. Sure. But like, it's just so funny, like they were so anti-Trump speaking, and they just elected Trump essentially by doing that. It's like they're like, fuck, can't believe you brought this guy down. We're gonna vote the gay pro-trans vax guy, and then half the Libertarian Party went, cool, we're gonna vote for Trump probably now. So. So like, I think they got what they deserved. It's a shit show. I feel bad for Josh. Like, you know, I knew Josh was unfortunately going to make it, but yeah. Josh was the only, you know, again, I'm biased. He's my boy, but like,
yeah,
he was the only viable person that, you know, would have been good anyway. Rectable's cool. I he's fine, but like, you know, let's be honest. Like, he wasn't really ready for the challenge. And then like, then you had
the Chase Oliver moment.
And Mike Termat, who the Biden moment. Yeah. Then you had these guys who actually like just kept plowing ahead, and then they devised the plan to do it. So it's like, what are you gonna do? It's your own fault.
Well, yeah, like the leftist shithead part of the Libertarian Party came ready to win.
Yeah,
and that was the main thing that I thought about, because like, people like us, we got jobs, we got families, we got other obligations outside the Libertarian Party. So understandably, a lot of these people booked their flights for like to leave, I think, what was it, like Monday or Sunday or something like that. So like a lot of the people from the Mises Caucus had left. And so that's where they got, like, I guess screwed on a little bit. But at the same time, I do kind of got to throw it a little bit in their lap, because first of all, you ran a boring candidate. And like you said, I like Rechtenwald. Josh is my boy. If I was there, I would have supported Josh. And then once Josh made it out, I would have instantly went over for Rec. Same. But that being said, they probably should have prepared a little bit more and realized like, hey, this could get a little bit squirrely. And the other thing that I think a lot of people should realize now is that Twitter, you know, followers and the podcast circuit does not at all transfer over into actual like electoral outcomes. As much as we would like to believe it, I mean, I thought for sure it was going to be a clean sweep, but I think we kind of see this theme over and over again where like, you know, just because somebody has a bomb Twitter following or they have like this huge, you know, ordeal about them and they did all the podcasts, that does not mean diddly dick when it comes to actually putting grassroots activism on the ground. And I think that's something that like a lot of people haven't really grappled with, especially in the Mises Caucus. So I know I kind of went on a little bit of a monologue there, but Typo, I want to throw it to you.
Yeah, I tend to agree with what you say. A lot of times, like things that happen, I mean, this, I think this is with everything, like people kind of overblow everything on Twitter and, you know, like just with like Israel, Palestine, I just saw a clip of like Howie Mandel telling like, he's like fear for his life because he thinks everyone hates Jews right now. And it's like, dude, I don't.
He's fear for his life, his whole life. He's a germaphobe. He can go fuck.
But that's like it's kind of like the rings true with it here too. It's like, just because like Clint Russell, big following, goes on bigger podcast and has a lot of influence. I mean, Dave Smith threw all of his weight behind Rechtenwald, probably the number one. He's like the face of the libertarian movement in a lot of ways, and couldn't get it done. And I mean, I'm sure this would have happened if like, say, Rec would have got the nomination, the other side would have like claimed cheating or whatever. But you know, I see a lot of that from like guys too, that they're like, oh, this guy backstabbed me. And it's like, dude, I'm sorry, but that's literally how politics is. Like, that's just how it works. Like, you play to win. It's not like fair. It's not like we have to do everything. Like, I'm sure there's nothing like illegal they necessarily did, but they probably found every little loophole or twist and turn they could do to try to pull a win off. And it seemed to work in their advantage. And I think you're right. Like, I think a lot of people kind of thought the Mises Caucus had it in the bag, but that is just not what happened. And there's definitely like, we talked about this before on our show, Five to Midnight. There's definitely like a huge left wing type people, or that people that just did not buy into like the Mises Caucus theme, that they were still in the party. And even if you got Angela elected, there was no like, you kind of probably had to do more, like maybe even like some purging to get that element out or something like that, because they were still there and they just had to wait 2 years and were able to take over.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this does a lot of damage specifically to the Mises Caucus. And we can kind of get into this a little bit more, but like, like I said earlier, I think the leftist shitbags, they know what they're doing when it comes to organizing and, you know, kind of getting together. And Adam, you might remember this. I don't know if you were at the convention in 2021 here in Pennsylvania for the Libertarian Party.
With the Pittsburgh one?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a miserable weekend for me because I had to fly to Charlotte to do a show. Then I fly back to Pittsburgh to do a show. And they were like, you want a 6.5-hour bus ride back? I was like, no, I'm going to fly back to Philly. And I took a 45-minute flight from Pittsburgh to Philly.
Dude, I honestly don't blame you at all. But like, this is kind of where look, I'm going to lay it out here. I don't think I talked about it publicly on the podcast, but like Michael Heiss doesn't like me at all. And yeah. I don't have any personal problems with him, but like where I kind of knew there was something wrong in Denmark, so to speak, was when he claimed that they were cheating in 2021 when there was a rule where basically like if you weren't a member of the Libertarian Party for like 3 months or 180 days, it was something like that, then like yep. they would always waive the rule, but this year they didn't because there was a lot more people from the Mises Caucus coming in to vote at this convention. Well, this was the first year in like 20 years that they didn't waive the rule. So Michael Heiss went on Tom Wood's show and, you know, told everybody that they cheated and forced all these delegates out, but they played by the rules and they came ready to win and they won that year. Now next year it was a different story, regardless, they didn't cheat. I mean, he kind of manipulated it in his favor, you know, at least the way that story was told. Now once again, he didn't come ready to win that year. 2022 was a completely different story. We came ready to win, but I think is Pat, whenever he gets to come on, will kind of he'll be able to back me on this, but like it really felt like in 2022 when, you know, the takeover happened after the convention, like there was all this anxiousness and like, you know, hey, let's fucking go, let's do it into the convention, and then afterwards that just gone. It just vanished into thin air.
Yeah, well, like you said, they didn't cheat in 2021, but it's like I should have been like they're being faggots about it is what he should have said, yeah.
Right?
Like, which they were 100%,
exactly.
But like, yes, they didn't cheat, right? 100%. So yeah. It's like, yeah, they're doing lefty shit. Why are we surprised by that? Oh, they're being fucking gay when they have to fucking when it gets against them. Yeah, no kidding, yeah. Dude. Like we should have accounted for that, but it's whatever. It's all in the past now. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
yeah. I think there's just a lot to learn. I think a lot of people too, I mean, myself, and what I've included in this is like, I joined the Libertarian Party, like I'm still officially a member or whatever. And I was like all on board when I thought it was like Dave Smith was going to be the nominee. And I was fully like, all right, let's see this. I thought Dave is like the face of libertarianism right now. He's probably the most popular guy because he was just on Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan. And I still, his version of how libertarianism is still appealing to me. But when he dropped out of it, they didn't even have to announce someone. I was already like, okay, well, I'm not even interested in this anymore. Like that's just not who I want. I wanted him to do it. That's what I thought the goal was. And honestly, I think that's how a lot of people felt. Like a lot of movement was lost when he dropped out of it. And I thought that was a problem. And I mean, I don't know who they could have found that would have been better than Breck necessarily, because I think everyone would have been let down because they would just saw it as like, oh, that's just replacement for Dave Smith. And that's not who people wanted. That's not what was promised. That's not what we wanted. And yeah, I think that was probably like the first, like, that's when I lost interest. And I just stopped complaining to paying attention almost completely to the Libertarian Party. And I just think like, you know, those annoying Project Liberal guys like Jonathan Casey and Joshua Eagle or whatever, like,
yeah.
I mean, those guys like live by this stuff. Like they love this stuff and those type. Right. And that's one thing that progressives have going for them when it comes to like real infiltration in political parties. Like they love this stuff and it's a lot easier for them to get on there. Like they don't spend as much as their time podcasting and meeting other people and trying to get ideas. Like they're on the ground doing stuff. And that's just not appealing to a lot of people like us, I'm afraid.
No, Typo, yeah. You actually nailed it on the head because you're right. It's like, sorry I spent my time trying to get strong, play football, and get pussy. Well, you fucking, no one wants to talk to you. And then, like, this is all
you were a debate club.
So, right. But that's kind of what, you're saying. It's like guys like us or like girls, women like us who are in our realm are more social. We're doing more shit. We're more active. We're more successful in careers and shit. Usually, again, law of averages type thing. And they're just like, no one likes me. I'm in my basement. Blah, 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 blah. And they fucking peel away. And then no one's touching their dick. And they're like, what nerdy shit I can do? I can't play sports. So what's the thing? Oh, this is a cool kids club I'm going to fucking try to get into. And then they do. And they ruin society that way. Lefties ruin society.
Yeah.
Heck,
yeah.
Kaczynski was right.
Yeah, the people, it's literally the people that just want to be left alone and live their lives are going to be dominated by the people that are active in this shit, that right. get into positions of power and push their agenda. Like, it's just, that's the nature of the beast. And that's like, that's kind of what happened here. I mean, it was a pretty close call. Like, and I honestly didn't think Chase was going to win. Like, I didn't think that was going to happen, but they made some backdoor deals and it turned in their favor. And unfortunately, this just looks really, really bad for the Mises caucus. Like, all that praise got. I really like all the...
Is he stepping down? Do you know that?
Yeah. I'm sorry to
pick up. Yeah, okay. Well, real quick, but before we keep rolling here, welcome, my brother Pat.
What's up, brother? Man?
Typo, you look like you just came back from Childerberg.
This is actually a flash burn from welding because I was welding without my hood on like an idiot. So
no, that's badass moves.
Okay, so you know what? My dad told me this story. This is completely irrelevant to what we're talking about. But he was welding on a boat and he was welding underneath him and he was wearing shorts. And surely enough, after a long enough, the boys got burnt.
Ooh. Yeah, dude. It's true. It's like a sunburn, dude. It's like a sunburn. And yeah, well, it's just so much, like, all I was doing was tacking something, and it's just so much easier. It's just annoying to, like, constantly pull your hood down, put a little tiny tack, pull it up, then put tack again.
You can't, like, you don't have one that's loose enough that you could just kind of nod your head.
Yeah, but that gets annoying when you're doing, like, 50 tacks. Like, sure. I was just being, like, more, I was just being lazy is what I was doing. Yeah. I wanted to get it done. And so I was just like, fuck it. I'll keep my hood up. Close my eyes, tack. And I
I feel like that's how our country's infrastructure is also being built. Like, fuck it. I'm going to close my eyes and just fucking go.
Listen, you do not want to see how we fix cars being flat rate because we ain't paid to sit there and take our time. We're paid to hurry the fuck up and get shit done. So when you see us sitting there like installing a belt, like there's this video and I've done this before. So like, on the old Trailblazers, when you would install a cooling fan, because you have to take the fan off to do anything on the front of the motor, you would just start the car. And before you'd start the car, you'd like make sure the fan was on a thread. And then you'd start the car and hold the fan and then hurry up and take your fingers off or else. Dude, I've done it.
Bro meathead shit. I love it so much. It's like, just move your hands quick enough, pussy, and you won't lose them.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I worked with the dude at the last shop, and I remember we used to hear all this banging all the time. And I remember watching him. He had a whole cradle. So, like, picture like this giant square with control arms on the side of it, like hanging, just teeter-tottering on like one jack. And I remember watching him like sitting there trying to balance it and he just calmly walks away and I watched the whole thing drop to the ground. He didn't even miss a beat. He didn't flinch or nothing. And you just heard this loud bang and I remember our boss calling us up for a meeting. He's like, oh, go check on Jay. He might be a pancake. We're like, oh no, that's like normal for him. He does that all the time.
He's good.
So sorry, Pat, you didn't get to say much. I guess go ahead and kind of let loose on what your thoughts were kind of seeing this from the outside looking in, because none of us went to the convention. So maybe we're like the peanut gallery here. But I know you had some thoughts initially about Trump coming that you laid out the last time you were on the show. And then obviously with how kind of everything played out.
Well, in a bit, I kind of changed my mind a little bit from when I came on because it was like RFK came and then. Because my main concern was how terrible the rollout was, that it made it look like we were endorsing Trump and that he was headlining the campaign or the LNC convention. So whatever, that was kind of, I felt better about it in terms of optics when all these other candidates were coming too. It looked less like an endorsement than the initial rollout, which had his head plastered on it saying,
on merch,
I'm in. And the merch.
Yeah, they made merch with Donald Trump's hair.
Yeah, and I mean, that was corrected within an hour or two of it going out, but still, that was my first impression. But I mean, more so, I was kind of lamenting the fact that, you know, we, since 2017, it was like, well, we're going to take over and we're going to run awesome president with great messaging and all this stuff. And that just didn't really happen. You know, Dave Smith didn't run, which he apologized for. And he apologized to me directly on Twitter. And that meant a lot to me. So Not that he owed me specifically an apology, because fuck that.
Yeah, well, Dave has been very, very upfront about taking accountability for his failures in this. Maybe even to a degree that people feel like is unnecessary. But I do feel like there was a lot of weight on his shoulders to run. And like, I don't hold it against him for not running. I kind of hold it against him for not coming out a little bit earlier and saying like, hey, I'm not going to do this, because... And Pat, I always bring this up. You were prophetic back in, I want to say it was like November or maybe late October of 2022 when the whole takeover happened. You're like, yeah, it feels pretty dead on arrival. And at the time, I'm like, oh, I don't know how much I agree with that. And then later on, dude, you were exonerated. And as was our mutual friend, Pete Quinones.
Well, I hope so. I mean, it sucks to be a downer, dude, because it's like, I don't want it to be that way, I suppose.
Right.
But on some level, it's kind of like, well... I don't know. It's past. The convention is over. So it's, I mean, what is it? What good does it do for me to take a victory lap or something, or spike the football? Because it's like, well, we're still here. The people are still here. And let's just move forward. But I think there were some good takeaways, and I'm not like in the know, but there were some victories. But at the same time, then I don't know how it could have gone any worse in terms of Trump. It could have gone worse, but I was worried about people perceiving us to be supporting and endorsing Trump by Trump coming. But actually, the inverse happened, where we turned off the entirety of the nascent anti-war right, I think, by all the headlines were libertarians boo Trump at convention. And they took it really hard. And so now we pissed them off. And then when we have the limelight, we end up nominating Chase Oliver for president, which makes us look like a bunch of pussies. You know, even Jimmy Dore was blasting us for this. And Jimmy Dore's like a good leftist. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's like we got to lick our wounds. And I don't know personally if I'm going to continue on paying any attention to the Libertarian Party personally, but whatever.
So this came up on my news feed, and I'll throw it over to one of you guys after this. But when I saw this, because I was looking up videos of Chase just to kind of like maybe see if I could see a speech from the LNC or something like that. And like, I did see some videos where he actually does say some good stuff, and I'm sure all of us would agree with him on some issues, but like the optics of him is so bad, and it's perfectly exemplified through this video here. Okay. So this is the Black Conservative Perspective, who's this dude's like huge on Trump, and he says, okay, well, right, libertarians, you know, Trump's your guy, essentially, whatever, you know, we could debate that all day, but 87,000 views within 2 days, the dude has 791,000 subscribers, and he did a video entitled, for those listening, "Woke Libertarians Humiliate Themselves with Clown Nominee After Booing Trump at Convention Speech." Once again, and then, I mean, if you read some of these comments, a woke libertarian is basically a Democrat. This is exactly where I'm registered as independent. The Libertarian Party is an absolute clown show. No self-respecting libertarian would boo Trump under this current administration. While I'm a libertarian, I'm not for open borders. Unfortunately, as with all parties and groups of people, there would be differing opinions. Trump has my votes. So libertarians nominated progressive socialist. The optics of this cannot be overstated about how bad they were. So, Pat, your initial thing was the optics of us essentially almost looking like we're endorsing Trump. It's like completely 180, kind of like you said, where we literally nominated one of the worst representatives of what the Mises Caucus is about, because he doesn't represent the like better part of the liberty movement at all.
And we did it when we had the most press that we've ever had for maybe decades.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was risky.
Yeah.
At the very least, you know, I understand.
You didn't realize how risky.
You got to take a Hail Mary sometimes, but it was, I don't know. I didn't totally agree with it. Now, maybe we won't know what the real effect of it is for a couple of years. And maybe Angela, like maybe the shot callers will be vindicated. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to see how right now, but.
Right. Typo.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. At least for right now, I don't see. I feel like, Michael Heiss just like resigned. A lot of people, it's just early after it all happened. So a lot of people are probably be a little bit over emotional. So they might, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to be like, oh, I'm done with the Libertarian Party. and you know, a couple months down the road or after this year's election or something, like, I don't know, maybe there'll be some more momentum to get a push for something. Who knows what'll come, but it is really, I mean, honestly, like, Trump coming to this thing is honestly like the biggest win for him, because he went there, they booed him, then they put up like a more lefty libertarian guy for the nominee. And now Trump can be like, look, I tried to negotiate with these freaks and they booed me and put up this guy. And I'm sure there's going to be a significant portion of libertarians that are going to vote Trump. They're going to pull the lever for Trump this election cycle. So
1000%.
Best case scenario for Trump was showing up and then them booing him and getting all mad. And then what sucks too is like there was probably like some good reasons to boo Trump on some of his issues when he tried to play like, you know, act like he was more of an anti-war candidate when, you know, he's not anti-war enough for most libertarians. And there's a lot of serious disagreements that they have, like stuff that we all agree with, but it's just the optics and first glance. And if you don't take a deeper look, and no one's going to know, oh, who the Mises caucus is, just like most people don't look at like who caucuses are in any other party. They just see the surface level stuff.
Right.
They don't dig any deeper. And they're going to call them freaks. And honestly,
that's what we're getting.
So. Yeah, I think them booing him was just dumb as fuck. It's also like, it's like, what are you, seven, dude? Shut the fuck up.
Well, yeah, they
fucking talk and shut up.
They booed so much of his speech too. Like, I get it. Like, tactically doing it, maybe once in a while if he says something dumb. Like when he got booed for cheering on the vaccine, and you know, when there was dead silence about the whole bringing out the owner of Johnson & Johnson at one of his rallies. Like, that's tactical. Like, that's
right,
reasonable.
I get that.
But like the entire speech these people were doing, I'm like, look, I'm one of the sharpest, you know, non-lefty lunatic critics of Trump there is. But I wouldn't have sat there and booed the entire time because I want to hear what he has to say.
Exactly.
I don't believe a word that he's saying, but at least hear the fucking dude out. And then, you know, he's very susceptible to flattery, so you might as well try to do something there. So I'm sorry I cut you off, Adam, but yeah, go ahead.
No, that's exactly pretty much what I was going to say. I was like, if anything, boom at the end when he's done. Then be like, all right, we heard you, boo. Like, you know, like I would expect the same out of Biden, though. Like, just boom at the end. Or like, just like let him fucking say his dumb shit. I don't like RFK. Like I sit there and boo RFK. The guy wants to jail you if you don't believe in climate change. You go fuck himself. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, who cares? But I'm not going to sit there and fucking boo him. It's just dumb.
Yeah, I mean, it's bringing a lot of attention over our way that could really help us out.
Yeah, it makes us look bad.
Yeah, so Conrail asked this question, and you guys can elucidate upon this further as well, but we'll throw it to Pat.
I don't know what that word means, Kyle, so stop using big words around me.
If I can ask...
It's a sign of disrespect.
Well, you know, you said the law averages earlier, so I think we all did IQ tests, and if I remember correctly, I think I was the highest. So.
You were. I was 120. You know what? We're all higher than Sam. That's all that really matters.
Sam had the glaring score of 108 that he performed live on air.
Yeah.
Idiot. Oh, dude, that was so great.
What an idiot. 121, Sam, you fucking idiot.
127. If I can ask Pat, would he agree that the Mises caucus focused too much on de-wokeifying the LP and not focus on the long-term replacement of what had run the LP before the takeover? Okay, well, real quick before I throw it to Pat, I think that's about as spot on as it gets. And Pat wrote a really good article that Daniel McAdams had celebrated him for, like the anti-woke to Zionist pipeline, where like you could be anti-woke, but that doesn't mean you should reflexively endorse everything that Israel does and everything that like the non-woke people do. Like, does that make sense? So, Pat, I'll throw it to you, and then everybody else, you guys can kind of take your pickings there.
Well, Jordan, there's another comment from Jordan Bemke saying, "Nah, they clearly did not de-wokeify enough,"
which is fair.
Well, I mean, I get that, and I get that sentiment, but it's like. It's like this whole problem with the LP in the first place. Like, I agree with this argument. There is a political party that's the third largest in the country that has ballot access that bears our name. So it's worth spending time to make sure that it is fucking libertarian. So people are going to know about that. But at the same time, it's like, well, you can't step away from it because it's going to exist whether you engage with it or not. Mm-hmm. So same thing with those people who are in the party who are, you know, left libertarians. Like, you can't purge them unless, I don't know, you go scorched earth and ruin the party in the process, because there's so many donors and people who have knowledge who have been involved in the party for so long.
And maybe, I think we saw the results of some of that, yeah, though, because like with the financial ruin that the Libertarian Party's in, and like, I'm not saying this is all the Mises Caucus's fault, but I think there is a little bit of blame there. And like, maybe it's not worth saving, but at the same time, like you said, it's going to be there whether you want it to be or not. People are always like, oh, we should just destroy the LP. Okay, well, once again, you guys are the ones saying that you got to engage with politics as it is, not as you want it to be. Okay, well, the Libertarian Party's here and it bears the name that we use, so what are we going to do about that? Because it's, well, not going to go away tomorrow.
I think the hidden political genius that we should all be listening to is Eric Garris, the, you know, co-founder of antiwar.com. And like us at the Institute, like we always can have Eric's ear if we want it, but he was involved in the LP since I think the 60s or 70s. I don't know too much about the history, but he's had been involved for such a long time, has seen so much shit, was there since like near the beginning. And he just said, like, the problem is that you're too sectarian. Like you need to put things aside and work together towards a common goal. And making enemies of half the party is not a great way to go forward unless you can replace, you know, get a super majority of people that will be engaged more for just the purpose, the sole goal of taking over the party. Because once you took over the party at Reno, the revolution was dead the next day because, okay, and I mean, maybe they tried to plan for that, but that was just what happened because it was like, well, we achieved our goal. Let's go home now. And yeah, it was a big risk. I don't know how you plan against it.
It was like a real streaking in the quad in college scenario where, yeah, like, this sounds like a brilliant idea. And then you do it and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Now I got to walk back to the campus naked.
Yeah, well, and this is kind of what we were talking about a little bit at the beginning of the show. So, Pat, I'll give you a brief second to respond. But like, it seems like a lot of those leftist activists, and we saw this here in Pennsylvania as well, they are able to establish, organize, and get shit done. And I mean, the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania, I hate to say it, was running pretty good before the Mises Caucus people took it over. And then now it seems like they're constantly replacing people. They're scrambling to find somebody to do certain functions and the people just get burnt out so quick. But, you know, kind of like, I think either Typo or Adam said that, like, these people live for that. It was Adam. They live for this kind of shit, to just the party politics and the slog that it is. I mean, I put this out on Twitter because Force Mommy kind of called me out, or not called me out in particular, but she always brings up how people don't get involved locally. Well, I mean, dude, that's a slog. Like, I do 3 podcasts, I play in a band, I hardly ever get to see my wife, and, you know, I work 5 to 6 days a week driving 45 minutes to and from work. Tell me exactly where I'm supposed to find time for the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, mean, well, they'll tell you, like, you don't care enough, and, like, they do it. It's like, yeah, you also, like, abandon your family for it. So it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I think organizing, though, was in Typo, you said that Heiss resigned. Is this recent or is this from a while
ago? He posted in the Discord for the Mises Caucus.
Oh shit. Well, that's sad. And I, you know, I don't agree with everything that Heiss has done, and I've been critical of Mises Caucus leadership, but that is sad. Like, I had a phone call with Mike and he was really nice to me personally. So I don't like to see that. But he was really good at, I mean, he built that, the whole thing up from the ground. I mean, that deserves commendation.
That is true. Like, everybody shitting on him, but like, he did bring a lot of things together and a lot of people together too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
like Dave and all those guys, like, you know, yes, like, that's something. Ron Paul, you know what I'm saying? Like, he did. So like people are like, oh, he saw, it's like, dude, you wouldn't be able to do a quarter of what he did. So it's like,
yeah. Yes. And it's easy, yeah, to sit on the sidelines and shit on decisions he made.
Right. Admittedly, absolutely. And that's why I've never tried to, like, knock the efforts that he put in. As a person, you know, him and I guess don't see eye to eye. Like I said, he doesn't like me. But what he was able to establish with the Mises Caucus was very impressive. Because once again, you got all the biggest names in the Liberty Movement to hop on board with the Libertarian Party. But another point that I made towards the beginning of the show is that just because these people have big followings and get on all these big shows and all this stuff, that doesn't mean that they're ready to organize and, you know, kind of keep shit rolling. And I think that's kind of what we see, is just because you see people with a good Twitter following and they're throwing bombs and seems like everybody likes them, that does not transfer over to political activism at all.
Agreed. Totally agree. Yeah, it's pretty evident, as we just saw. this past weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, Clint losing the VP thing was actually kind of surprising to me, you know, because I thought he would definitely at least get it. Like, I didn't, you know, like, but.
Well, he won initially, but then it was kind of the backdoor deals. So my understanding of what happened was that basically Mike Termott made an agreement with Recktenwald that he would drop out if he was like kind of in a corner and then endorse Recktenwald or something like that. Like he would basically back Recktenwald if Mike Termott wasn't going to kind of make it the whole way through. But then he flipped and took Chase Oliver's side and said that if Chase wins the nomination, then he'll be a VP for him. And then essentially threw Recktenwald under the bus on that whole situation, which got, you know, Chase the nomination. And I don't want to monologue too long, but like Mike Termott, I'm sure on some issues he's fine, but Pat pointed this out to me that the day that Iran had struck Israel, he literally went out and condemned Iran, but you can't find him doing it, condemning anything about Israel. So what's that tell you? His foreign policy instincts are that of Joe Biden and all the other Zionists, which is, it's not a good look for the Libertarian Party.
He also said we need strategic clarity regarding Taiwan, that we need to openly pledge to defend Taiwan.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be a better position for him to maintain strategic ambiguity. Like,
that's like been a U.S. policy forever. I think it still is officially.
It's worked.
Yeah. I mean, it's worked. You know,
you're gonna be more hawkish than the U.S. State Department.
Remember when Trump had the phone call when he was president with the Taiwan president, and all the left like lost their mind and like no one gave a shit. You remember that? Like Trump spoke like right when he first won, the Taiwanese president called him and he answered he was like, "Hey, what up?" You know, and they were like, and then of course the media right away was like, "He's so retarded. He should have known that we don't talk." Of course, because they're just anything he does is wrong, you know.
Yeah.
But I was like, who cares if he talks to this? Like, who gives a shit?
He's not talk to everybody.
Yeah, it's not like he was like, "I'm gonna pledge my undying allegiance." He was just took a phone call from the guy. The guy just called me like, "Yo, congrats," and he was like, "Thanks."
So I want to get to some of these comments. Where was it? D&D for political nerds. Yeah, that's 100%. Essentially what a lot of that stuff is. Second Story Podcast. People need to grapple with the fact that there was a real cult of personality around the Mises caucus.
That's true.
It's very true. And I think nobody wanted to acknowledge that. I think everybody just wanted to say, hey, shut up. Here's Michael Recktenwald. He's going to be your candidate. And you have to accept that. JVP just got back from the direct show. What did I miss? It's easy to take mediocre people and make them feel like somebody's giving them a fake social club titles. It's hard to get impressive people and put them through time-consuming, pointless meetings. So yeah, exactly. So, Adam, I don't know how much you kind of want to get into this, but I know you were a little bit more involved locally, and I'm sure you could probably speak to this much better than any one of us.
Yeah, dude, I was the board rep for a little bit, and I was like, yeah, I have like comedy to go do. I can't sit on a 7-hour meeting on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't. Like, it's great. Like, dude, I've had shows at like 8:00 and like they were still on a meeting from like 1:00. And that was on purpose. No, I ask anybody from PA. That was, I think, 100% on purpose. Like, intentionally done because like the lefties were like mad that they lost. This is like right after they lost in Reno. So they would just be cunts and like fucking just drag everything out and fight everything. And I was like, I literally don't care. I'm just going to hang up. And I would leave. And it, like Bucks County wouldn't have a vote. I'm not doing this. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to tell jokes. Like, I'm doing my job. Like, this is crazy. I'm not going to sit here and like wait. I thought one time I did this as a just to see for myself. I started this. We had to start the comedy show. We're still in a meeting. I was like, I'm going to go do my set and then check this when I'm done. I did a 20-minute set. And they were still going. And I was like, this is fucking crazy. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, that kind of goes to the point of like, for what we do, I mean, podcasting and, you know, the other activities in our life, they're way more rewarding and, you know, more instant gratification than a political party. And especially when you look at like the record for the Libertarian Party over the last, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, however long it's been, you know, what do they have to show for it other than, you know, now at this point we have like cool people that run the Libertarian Party, but like, what does that mean? Angela's saying that like, hey, we'll be in that cabinet. I don't believe that for a second until I see it, but you know, Josh, or yeah, from what they do to extend the meeting so long?
Oh, they just would like they would they would always call like try to extend like the voting process or like try to like not called the question. So they were like, you know, this is boring, like bullshit, like Robert Rule stuff. But it's like, they would never let the debate die. They would just constantly keep arguing points. And then like, because of certain votes, and then it goes to votes. And if they have enough people to vote, then the debate keeps going. And then like, it won't shut down if they're all coordinated. And like, we don't have enough guys on our side, then would have kept going for hours. Shit like that. All these dumb little rules that you don't even know about until you get involved in this bullshit. And you're like, this is gay. This is gay. Can we all just be cool and adults about it and just be like, a 1 hour meeting is pretty I think reasonable, maybe a 2 hour meeting for like convention season to get some extra shit in, but like, they're just being assholes. And again, it's like, we just keep harping on this, but it's because they're losers with nothing else to do. Like I forget, one of the chicks was like intentionally ignore her children to stay on the meetings. Like, I remember one time the kid came in and was like, Mom, like, I want to see you. Like, he said it. We all heard it. We all heard it. We all heard it. So now I was like, what are we doing? I was like, what are we doing here? Like, this is pathetic. You're a fucking loser. Like, dog shit loser. You really are. Like, these people suck. This is, I just can't do it. I just can't mentally do it. I get too violent and angry, no one go to jail. So I just stopped. So I was like, I'm out. I'm fucking done. Okay.
Maybe we could go into some of what the optics are for some of this and kind of what happened at the convention. So we watched this on Monday. Pat, I don't know if you saw this, but this was Michael Rechtenwald, I think actually right before Donald Trump was supposed to speak. Okay, I'm sorry, my DMs are up.
I mean, Donald is on. Is it? Never mind.
One more time.
But listen.
Did I defend Rechtenwald?
Yeah.
I mean, Donald is on. Is it? Never mind.
I'm gonna defend Rechtenwald real quick. Okay. As a comic. If you start to stutter a joke, just bail. It's better just to bail than try to finish it because it's never good. It works, right? Mm-hmm. So he just kind of like did the right thing where he was like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, this is done. We're going to move on to the next thing. It's right to do that, but it's funny because it does looks bad.
I think that was right before Donald Trump was supposed to speak, if I remember correctly.
He wasn't doing a Joe Biden impression.
No.
No, God. He just stuttered whatever his joke, whatever he's going to say. And he was like, nope, that's gone. And he's right. It's gone. He can't recover from it. Because if you're roasting somebody and you're like, and they're like, you fucking stuttering bitch. Immediately you're out. Like, you lose. You're on the free seat. So it's better just to move on and be like, yeah, no, that was wrong. Just fuck it. Just
keep going. Yeah, it was totally a Joe Biden thing because Joe Biden will start mumbling and then just bail on a sentence. And that's exactly what happened.
I couldn't imagine being really high and speaking in front of a crowd of a national audience plus a crowd of like 800 people live. Fuck, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, well, my understanding was, okay, well, before I kind of go on there, Nutter, have you been that high before?
When I was younger and like weed still affected me, now it doesn't affect me anymore. So when I was younger, for sure.
Pat might have said this in one of our group chats, but like, just the professionalism of going up there. So my understanding of what happened was that Rec had smoked beforehand and then someone gave him a gummy or shrooms or something like that, which it's kind of like, you're about to do something that's, you know, probably going to make national headlines. You should probably be a little bit more prepared in that moment. Yeah. Like, I don't know, man. Like, if you need to take the edge off, I get it. But like, to take shrooms or something that's going to potentially really fuck you up. For me, I wouldn't drink or do anything like that if I knew I had to be on point. But some other people operate differently. I just think that's incredibly unprofessional. If you want to be taken seriously as a political movement, probably not a good idea to get up there and pull a Joe Biden because you were on shrooms.
No, I agree. Bad look.
Yeah.
I was just defending his right to not go back and try to repeat what he said. You just got to move on from it. It's all his own. I was just defending his actions. I was defending his bit.
I think you're totally right, Adam. Totally right.
Yeah.
Wasn't there something like after Trump talked, there was like a rebuttal or something the candidates got to do? because I know Chase and like a couple other ones did, but I know Rec bailed on that because he said he was too high.
Yeah, that's not a good look. I like Rec.
Yeah.
Dude, Rec was ripping vapes on the plane. I was sitting next to him on the plane back from Texas. And he's like ripping fucking a vape in the plane. I was like, dude, that's all right.
We're just kind of gangster.
Yeah, I was very impressed. I was like, I wouldn't even do that. I would never do that. I'm a puss when it comes to flying. Like look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just feel like and that got pointed out on Twitter. Like Matt Walsh shared that thread about him being like high on an edible or whatever it was. And then a lot of people started dogpiling on it. I mean, it is kind of embarrassing. I mean, that was like the Mises Caucus guy too. Man. And it's just like, damn, dude. And that was like the day before the nomination took place too. So it was like, I don't know. It was all kind of a shit show. And man, I feel bad for the Mises Caucus guys in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, and it just seems like he, once again, I think probably every single one of us, if we were there, it probably would have been Josh then Rec. I would think for most of us, if not, you know, maybe Rec then Josh, but we wouldn't have voted for Chase or anybody like that. But like just, Rec has really seemingly failed to take accountability for the fact that, like, first of all, you really weren't like the most motivating candidate, the best speaker. And then, you know, that whole Biden moment that night probably turned some people off because it's like, okay, well, if this is like your moment and you just completely butchered it, how can we depend on you in the future? You know, I hate to say that because I like Rec, but he really has kind of the sore loser mentality ever since this whole situation kind of played out.
And it wasn't the first time he had put out like kind of unhinged tweets, and like, I don't know. The whole optic of like from the mainstream, the whole press coverage of the Libertarian Party has been, these guys are unhinged, loser, drug addict, whatever. And then like the famous underwear candidate moment thing, like that has plagued the party since that happened. And it just seems to me like, I mean, I hate to be a dick about it, but it's like, we're just such unserious people. Like if you go to any LP convention, it's just a bunch of neckbeards there, like autistic neckbeards. And like, I say that lovingly because whatever, but when you go to a Republican convention, you got big money, you have lawyers and doctors, right? And I mean, I'm not going to pretend like everyone there isn't on coke or something, but at least you wouldn't know about it looking at it, you know.
Dude, but no, Pat, you're right, because like I did the Minnesota convention, like the show for this year, and I led with like because it was like multiple things happening in the hotel that I was at. So I led with like people were asking where to find a Libertarian convention. I was like, just follow the cargo shorts and autism.
Yes.
And yeah. And they were like, no, that hits you close to home. And I was like, got it. They were like, no. How dare you?
Dude, I really wanted to come to that convention specifically and hang out because I went a couple of years ago and I knew you were going, and I tried to get a bunch of people to go, but it wasn't in the cards.
Yeah,
but
that would have been a fun weekend because I would have appreciated you there. Trust me. It was a fun show, actually. I was just bored because I didn't really know anybody.
Yeah.
So like, I was just like kind of one of those, but it was a fun.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
Fun show. Outside of that immediate bomb I had, because they were not into that at all, it went fine.
Yeah, Kevin. Yeah. So Kevin in the chat says, that's exactly what I'm talking about with the role-playing politics. I mean, it is. And it doesn't help that kind of optic to have people high at the convention. You had a hot mic moment where a guy was talking race and IQ and big black dicks. Like that was on the live stream. Like thousands of people watched that and heard that. And then you had, you know, all the mainstream headlines were like raucous libertarian convention with like all these crazy people in the audience reacting to Trump and stuff. Like, we should have anticipated that any booing of Trump would have led the headlines. Right. I mean, what else are they going to pick up on, and how are they going to try and twist it to make Trump look like an idiot? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, even the libertarians hate him. Okay.
Right. Yeah. If I'm not a hot mic, though, I would have also leaned, I would have been like, big butt dick, big butt dick. Like, it's 100%.
I mean, yeah, like, we're in the space, so we know that those are funny conversations that happen, but they're not serious, you know? Right. Like, and everyone's there to have a good time, but should they be there to have a good time? Or should be should they be there to get business done?
Right. Yeah. Well, everybody, you said it. I mean, you're nailing the point. It's like they, I don't know how many people at the RNC you think or DNC are just on acid and mushrooms for 3 days. You know, it's like probably maybe one, but not the majority. I'll tell you that much. Like, you know, it's just like, And like all these, it's like, you're like Pat, when you're like, oh, like this, they show the underwear moment. It's like, yeah, because that is kind of us. Like, they're not misrepresenting us. That is us. Like, they're actually accurate. We suck. Like, we are a mess. So, like, they're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel bad for Angela because I know we've all probably interacted with her in some way or another. I've had her on the show a bunch of times.
No, I love her in
person. But she's absolutely phenomenal. And she is a very serious person. And it sucks because she actually is kind of like more of that activist type. But she just has like nobody there to back her. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, it doesn't seem like there's anybody really there pushing and helping her along. And she put this all together, did a fantastic job. And like, Laura Loomer was fucking going after her. And I don't know if anybody else saw this, but they were saying that RFK supporters were going to go boo Trump at the convention. I'm like, where are all the RFK supporters in the Libertarian? There's definitely some, don't get me wrong. But then like literally the next day, he got like 5 votes in like the first round. That was it. So like, I don't think there was any grand conspiracy against Trump. I think it was just that there were some shitheads that are libertarians that wanted to make some noise. And then I didn't think the headlines were going to be that big. Like, I figured, oh, they would just say, oh, Trump speaks at Libertarian Convention. But they, like you guys said, they basically wanted to paint it so that way it said, oh, look, even libertarians hate Trump. But it's like, okay, maybe we do, but it's not for the reasons that you do. You guys hate him because he doesn't do what you want. Right. We hate him because he's too much of a cuck for the establishment.
Right. We hate him for real reasons. I say that all the time to people. I'm like, I'm not a huge fan of Trump because, like, I don't like him for the real reasons you shouldn't like him, not because of the media being like, he said this in a tweet. Like, he's destroying democracy. It's like, shut up, idiot.
He's nowhere near that based. Please, I wish he was.
Exactly. I was like, yeah, that'd be great. I would love for him to destroy democracy. Yeah. He's not.
What do you think about Angela? So Angela said, you know, we're going to get a person in his cabinet or something that's a libertarian. And then here's a hypothetical for you. If the only thing we accomplished by having Trump at the convention at the cost of, I'll get into that, but if the only thing we achieve is freeing Ross Ulbricht, is it worth sabotaging the party for the next 4 years? Like, to me, in destroying what libertarian credibility we have with the new right, to me, as much as I love Ross Ulbricht and he should be free, definitely, freeing one person, I don't think it's worth it. I hate to be
also.
A
who's to say he does it?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, we're in a very big hypothetical.
The false promise.
Yeah. If I'm running for president, I'm gonna lie my ass off.
Like, yeah. Well, and why is nobody talking about that? That like Trump is, he's campaigning right now. So do you not think he's gonna make all the wild promises in the world and try to fill your heads with hopes and dreams so he can get reelected? And I mean, it was the same deal in 2016 where he was calling out, oh, the interest rate bubble, this economy's held up by low interest rates and unemployment checks
during COVID.
Yeah, and all that stuff. And then he gets in, and literally like a week after he gets in, he said, oh yeah, all the job numbers are right. This is all right. Real. Like, just I fully expect that to be the situation this time around. And the people who don't think that's gonna be the situation, I think you're literally running headfirst into a fucking brick wall. I don't think he learned anything because he still says, oh yeah, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley, they're all gonna be a part of the administration. So like, I don't know, where's this promise and why should we believe that he's gonna put a libertarian in there? I mean, I hope he does. I'm not saying I hope he doesn't. I sincerely hope he does, but we have no good precedent to go off of to believe that he's gonna come through on any of his promises.
I mean, maybe if he freed Assange, that might be worth it. Not because I care about Assange as a person per se, like I do Ross,
It's the cause.
But the implications for free speech and what it is the huge struggle. And for Ross, he said, well, I'll commute Ross Ulbricht, which still means that what he did is criminal. It's not, you know, and it has limited precedence anyways, as, you know, from the lawyer point of view.
Typo, do you got anything to add?
I feel like libertarians don't really have much of a grounds for negotiation. So even if it is a false promise, it's something that's worth it. I mean, what are you going to do? Vote for Chase? Like, I don't really know what's better in this situation. I know he might lie, but I think reaching out to Trump might be the best situation for Libertarian Party and trying to negotiate a deal. If you can get one cabinet member, I mean, that would be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, how funny. I don't know. It was like if it's like travel,
transportation. Transportation. I mean, I know it wouldn't be like that much. I mean,
housing development.
It's like a shit job. It's like if you're running against someone in a primary and they offer you the transportation secretary position, it's kind of like an FU to the elites and like that status. But I just feel like, yeah, it's worth a shot at this point. I mean, what you took the risk of bringing Trump there. It didn't work out. You got a bad nominee. Might as well go big. Try to get something from this Trump deal. That's how I see it.
We'll replace Pete Buttigieg with Chase Oliver. we'll get equally as gay Secretary of Transportation or whatever.
Maybe that's just a position that you have to be gay to do. Like, that's just like part of it. It's like, you know, it's like you're privatized
yeah. transportation everywhere, but it's just like coded in pride flag. I'm like, all right, yeah. Fine.
You know, like, I also want to make it very clear, I'm not voting libertarian in this conference.
I'm not either. There was a little chain that I put up and I commented on it. I was number like 15 or 16. I woke up this morning and there was over 70 people that said they will not vote for Chase. It was like Clint said, I for one will not vote for Chase. And then that stupid redheaded libertarian commented second. And then Heidi was third. Like I said, I was 15 and I had to shut notifications off because I was getting so fucking many of it, because people would go from like number 72nd person who was a good vote for Chase and like all of them. So Pat, you look like you had something to say. I want to throw that over to you before I read some of these comments.
Oh, well, the Libertarian in Trump's cabinet should definitely be Rand Paul. I mean, what if it's just, oh, well, I was going to appoint Rand Paul anyways. Yeah. So,
I mean, it's like a W for us, but it is a W still, overall.
Yeah, I know he's not really a Libertarian, but if we can negotiate Colonel Douglas McGregor as Secretary of Defense, I would put that over everything. Like, I wouldn't. That would be the greatest thing ever. I don't know if it's possible or if there's any way you can negotiate that. But he does have experience with the Trump administration before. I mean, it was only like
two weeks.
Yeah, it was only like the last couple months, like after he lost the election, and he helped negotiate the end of Afghanistan war. So, I mean, that's something I think is at least plausible that you can. I don't know if it'd be the position of Secretary of Defense, but he also said that he would get people in like higher position. I don't really know what that means. I mean, it's kind of up in the air anyways, but just getting Colonel Douglas McGregor around Trump would be the greatest thing for the Libertarian Party could do to me.
See, this is why we truly need like a crazy president. And I don't mean crazy in the bad way. I mean like crazy, like cuckoo crazy. Because then like they're going to be like, you know, they'll be like, look, this is my new Secretary of Defense. Squawkers is like a parrot. And everybody's like, ah, it's a parrot, sir. And he's like, no, but he's good. Like, tell him about your thing. And then, you know, it's like, we need someone like that in there. Because then No bombs are getting dropped if you have that guy in office. He physically can't do it. A parrot can't drop a bomb. It's crazy. He can't speak English.
I want to read through some of these comments. What do you mean by sabotage, though? The Libertarian Party isn't going to win anyway. They're sabotaging themselves, nominating Chase and Mike.
What I mean by sabotage is like, well, this is the result of having Trump at the convention. Like the losing the nomination on the national stage is what I mean by sabotage. And if it affects, like, totally sets the Mises Caucus revolution back or destroys it or destroys the party for Rothbardian libertarians for the next generation, was that worth it? That's what I mean.
Okay. All right. You're the same people who think Trump will put a libertarian in his cabinet and he ain't doing a thing. Also, I saw today he said Fauci had no major role in his administration in 2020.
You got dog walked.
So he wants to take up all the Fauci's response, like what he did during his administration. He wants to take that, like
right?
That
really... What an idiot! You're truly retarded.
The question is, how does the Libertarian Party leadership pivot, and what will that do to the party? Honestly, you guys can throw your thoughts out here as well, but like, I think they're probably going to almost distance themselves from Chase, and how they do that, I don't know. Either that, or just kind of like promote him when he says something good, because he does say some good stuff occasionally. But when he goes off into the woke stuff, the gender queer stuff,
we need more drag queen shows.
Yeah,
I agree.
I think they're the Libertarian Party is probably just going to be like, all right, well, we're just going to leave that alone. But like when he says anti-war stuff, we'll gladly boost that. I think that's going to be their strategy. And if not, that's going to have to be their strategy if they ever want to kind of, this sounds pretty shitty, but like redeem libertarianism as like a brand as a whole, because like now I don't think people look at Dave Smith as, you know, like the libertarian. They don't look at Ron Paul. Every time they look at Joe Jorgensen and remember the, we must be actively anti-racist, and they're going to look at Chase Oliver and like, dude, this weekend was brutal. People were looking through every crack, crevice, everything to find a tweet from Chase Oliver of him saying some dumb shit. And they're like, look, this is libertarianism. And
right.
Like, I still consider myself a libertarian, but like when people say, oh, I'm not a libertarian because of this, that's dumb, but I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. Yeah. I mean, and actually there was one tweet that I forgot what it was, but I clicked on it and then like a minute later it was deleted. So I was like, you should have cleared out all these tweets before the convention, dude, because there was some ones that, I mean, you pretty much see all of them all over the timeline. You going back from like, and there's a lot of them they pulled up where he was just trashing the Mises Caucus when they took over in Reno. And people are like, oh, you should be endorsing this guy. And it's like, yeah, well, this guy like drugged the Mises Caucus like all the way he could when they took over. And so I don't know if they're going to like just instantly turn around and just endorse him happily. There's a huge split in the Libertarian Party. Like, I mean, obvious, like it's not going to be that simple. I think even like if Rec or Josh would have won, the other side was not going to just gladly endorse 100%. Them. That was not going to happen. So it's like, let's pretend like that, like, oh, okay, well he won. Like that's not what have been your attitude. Everyone knows that. So expecting the Mises Caucus to just like get in line and support this guy, like that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Pat, what do you think leadership's going to do?
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I think, I don't know, you got to rally the troops again and get back to the street and try to inspire some kind of confidence. I mean, everyone was saying, so one complaint that I have is every time I would voice my opinion on Twitter, I'd be like, I don't know, I'd be super emo about it. But people will get so mad at me, and I should have probably kept my mouth shut, but people will get really mad. And one thing they would try to do is, I don't use this term lightly, but they would gaslight you. And they would say, well, you never understood what it was about from the beginning if you think this. And it's like, no, I was there. I mean, it was all about, yes, Project Decentralized Revolution was a part of it. But the main thing that inspired people to flood into and volunteer was Tom Woods and Dave Smith and the promise of a Dave Smith candidacy and restarting Ron Paul Revolution 2.0. And so I don't even know where you go from here, because now it was a top-down thing. It was a top-down movement because the top inspired all of the people to come up from the ground. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what you do if there's no energy from strong leadership and strong messaging. And that's why I was so pissed when they turned their back on LPNH, because that's what I thought, that's what they were talking about the whole time, is, oh, we're going to have bold, strong, unapologetic messaging. Okay, well, LPNH is living that. And but then
more messaging, just not like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I don't know where you go from here. I wish I had the answer.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about that?
Okay. About what they're about, like the leadership and all that?
Yeah, I mean, everything I just said about, you know, Ron Paul 2.0 and from the top, and you know, the bold messaging and stuff.
Yeah, well, I really do think that, and I hate to say this because I like Dave, but like, I think him not running really kind of was like the death knell for the Mises caucus.
I agree.
And specifically the long wait time between him, you know, between the takeover and him not immediately kind of flipping over to start campaigning, because people were waiting for it. And there was somebody who, Adam, you probably know who I'm talking about, who had mentioned like, hey, we're starting to bleed donations at this point because Dave hasn't announced.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that threw a lot of people for a whirl. And I think him kind of holding off and being hot or cold was, like I said, it was a death knell because people didn't know. People are holding their cards. They're like, okay, well, should I donate to the party because Dave's going to run, or should I just hold on to my money because there isn't going to be somebody there to do it? So, like, if Dave wasn't going to run and he wasn't ready for it, I like, that's okay, but should have been a little bit earlier to the punch and said, like, hey, I can't do this, but we're going to find somebody else who's going to be at least decent. And they tried with Rechtenwald, but once again, it was way too late, so there wasn't, like, enough natural support for him. It was more of, like, here, just prop him up, make sure that his campaign looks good. And then, you know, he went on Part of the Problem and, you know, made it through, but I mean, all the comments were just dogging him.
And it wasn't only that, though. It was, you know, all of the big guys disappeared, you know, as soon as the takeover happened. You, like, Tom Woods disappeared, which if I was being accused of being, you know, a groomer and a rapist, I'd be like, you know what, I got kids, I got young daughters who are teenagers, like, that is way more important than the stupid D&D, you know, playing politics thing. So I don't blame him, but it was like all of that evaporated, and where do you go from there? I mean, I just don't know.
Yeah,
in defense of Heist, I mean, he does have a point. It wasn't that Rechtenwald was the bad choice per se, he was the only choice, and I kind of get that, and I kind of don't agree with it, but there's something to it, I think. Sorry, Typo, I cut you off,
man. No, you're good, man. I think really with the Mises Caucus, it all really kind of depends on what Dave Smith does.
Yeah.
Like, he's the guy that brought all the people in. A lot of the other influencers followed him into it. I don't think if he bails, I think a lot of people are going to bail out of it. And that, I think you're right. It was a top-down thing. Like, it was led by the influencers of the podcast scene, and they're the ones that pushed this. I mean, that Michael Heist got them involved, and that was a very smart move, because once they got them involved, that's when all this movement built up, and there was a movement to take over in 2022. So honestly, all eyes are on Dave Smith at this current moment, and if he decides to bail or it's not worth it, or if he's going to move on to a different tactic or strategy, whatever it is. And I think you got a little bit, I mean, he's making headway. He's just on Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan. So it's not like he's not, like, you know, doing what he usually does, which is great. But it's really, I think it's up to him to decide, is this party salvageable? Is it worth it? Is it worth his energy? And is it worth sending his audience and convincing them to do it? Because he made a lot of promises. And the whole promise, I mean, and then all the influencers around him, like at Pete Quinones at the time, Scott Horton at the time, there was other people that were talking about this, like Dave Smith going to run, and they were blatantly saying it. Dave Smith didn't exactly say it, but he insinuated it multiple times.
Pretty clear.
And when that kind of fell through, the movement kind of fell, and I think it's really up to whatever Dave wants to do. He's kind of like the leader of the Mises, Rothbardian libertarians, and if he decides it's not worth it, then I think the party's done, at least with the Mises caucus.
Yeah,
for sure. I gotta run. I gotta chance to do.
Okay, yeah, so, dude, you're good.
I gotta go, but I love you guys. Yeah, this has been fun.
Give your plugs.
Cult of Us podcast, of course. Typo, Kyle, myself, and Luke and Sam. Files at midnight every Monday night at 8. Just check me at Adam Nutter on all the social media. I'm doing shows and stuff. I think I'm going back to Texas soon too. Oh yeah, so I'm going back to Texas soon, I think too. So hit me up, and thank you. Bye. Love you guys.
See you, dude. Yeah, I agree that it's kind of sad because, like, Dave is the face of libertarianism essentially right now, and I'm kind of surprised that like not more people kind of caught on to this, that like Dave was really pumping up the convention and then this whole catastrophe happened. Like he was on Joe Rogan promoting it. He was on Tucker Carlson promoting it and saying, oh, our guys are going to win. And then essentially it just nowhere. And like you said, Typo, I really think that if Dave steps away, then I think the Mises Caucus project, I mean, if Heist stepped away, I think it's done. So I don't like that, but I think that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, it's at least going to be dormant for a while until, I don't know, some other influencer or some other movement, grassroots, another catastrophe of some sort that gets people moving. I don't know. I don't know what will happen, but I think it's like just how it is. It's all up to Dave, whatever he wants to do. And at least it's going to take a lot of convincing to his people to be like, listen, this time's different. You know, 2024 is going to be different, or 2026 and 2028 is going to be different. Like, I don't know. It's kind of in shambles at this point. And I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do or if someone else is going to take up the mantle, but it all started with Dave kind of, I mean, it started with Heist, but once he got Dave, that's when it got all of its momentum. And I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go or what's going to happen.
So one thing that I wanted to kind of get up here. Okay. I got it up. This was a picture that they posted that Tom Wood shared. And it's a picture of, for those listening, Chase Oliver, Mike Termott, and I don't know who the hell the guy's in the middle, but they're holding up a sign saying hate won't make America great. And then let's not forget that Mike Termott, still to this day, his name says Libertan.
Yeah, it does.
And his first tweet, yes, and his first tweet after he got the vice presidential nominee appointment, whatever, he had said that we need to fight prejudicism. That was his first tweet. So, and Dave Smith rightfully called it out as a Joe Jorgensen moment. So this kind of leads to the question of, what do you guys think this campaign is going to look like? And the bigger question is, do you think libertarianism as a brand is like done after this? And I don't know, maybe people felt this way in 2020, but I don't know, because like, these were our guys. These were our people that were generally aligned with, and they really dropped the ball, because it's like, oh, our guys took over the Libertarian Party, and then we got, as Pete calls them, a gay race communist.
Can you go back to that screen? The screen you were on. I wanted to point something out. So Dave V. Goliath says, hey, Tom, you're great and all, much respect, but we could have used some of these anti-Chase tweets and emails over the past few weeks and months.
Oh,
he says, never in a million years did it occur to me that anyone would support him, not to mention anybody who's going to vote for him won't be swayed by me, and anyone who would be swayed by me wasn't going to vote for him. I don't know. Like, you heard me earlier, I kind of talked about how Tom disappeared after Reno, or even before that, maybe.
Yeah.
But they hit him hard with that whole, like, I don't even really want to talk about it, because I love Tom, and it's like, talking about it gives it air and attention again. But
I mean, I went to bat for him and people went nuts on my Twitter timeline, but I'm like, no, fuck you. I mean, he's like the lovable old Catholic dude. At one point, Pat, I know you called him like a crotchety right winger, but I mean, he kind of has that. But like, he's our guy. He's well spoken, and I mean,
that endearingly, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. But like, he's done a lot for our people, so like, he is kind of our guy. So yeah, I'm going to defend him.
And it's like, no one knows what really happened. I mean, I don't know what happened. But whatever.
It was 20, 30 years ago. It don't matter at this point.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, what matters now is that he has teenage daughters that need him.
Yeah.
To be their dad.
Right. Well, to your point, though, it does seem like Tom basically pumped up the Mises Caucus, had Michael Heiss on a couple times, and then kind of just stepped away. And then you didn't really hear much from him after that.
I think, though, that this is a very fresh wound, and I think people are very emotional. Maybe we're blowing things out of proportions. I mean, there were victories, and so if this movement is going to fall apart like a house of cards because we had one LNC during an election year that didn't go our way, like, do we ever deserve to be here in the first place? Like, if this falls apart like a house of cards, then it's like, well, it was never there in the first place. Mm-hmm. Because if we had a real strong movement, it wouldn't take one upset disappointment to make it fall apart. We have four more years, but we have this time. Like, these people are here. We're all young guys for the most part. We have a lot of activism in front of us. So there's time. We just need to, you know, lick our wounds and figure shit out. I think instead of just, I know I've been saying it's dead on arrival for years, but it's like, I don't know. A lot of people spent lots of time and money they didn't have on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's kind of the other thing. But I don't want to monologue on that. Typo, anything you kind of got to add there and about the journal thing? I know you had a pretty good take about that whole situation, specifically with Chase running around a pride flag.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think I said it on Twitter, but, you know, it's hard for, like, a lot of libertarians, they try to avoid like cultural issues. This is like a, I think it's a really bad problem with libertarians. Actually, I think, you know, if you're not even defending a culture, then like, what are you trying to save here? Like, you know, like what, like, I don't really know exactly. I mean, I had to learn this lesson too. I used to think that stuff just didn't matter. You know, it was all about like, who cares how this, you know, how this person represents themselves. It's their ideas that matter. When like, maybe that's how I can differentiate people, but that's just not how most people work. They look at people and what they represent. And like, so when they see all these pictures of Chase, you know, with like the pride flag, it's like, it's they view it no different than like what the Democrats are. Like, they just don't view it any different. And right. For libertarian people specifically, a lot of people associate that with the flag of the regime. I mean, they put this flag over Afghanistan. They will prosecute people for doing burnouts on pride flag in the streets. You know, like, this is the symbol of the regime, if they like it or not. Like, it that's what it is. They care more about the pride flag than they care more about the American flag. So when people that don't take much of a deeper look at things, they're just going to see that and immediately think, that's my enemy. I want nothing to do with that. I don't care what he's saying. It would be like someone in the 80s that was really good, had the best libertarian positions, really good on every issue, but they were constantly like coded themselves in the hammer and sickle flag. You would just look at that and be like, on the surface, you'd be like, dude, what is that? Like, what? Like any American in the 80s, a politician running, but would constantly hold up the hammer and sickle, people would lose their minds. Even if his positions were like amazing, like, oh, he de-escalate the nuclear conflict and, you know, talking, railing against the Fed, like, no one would take him seriously because he looks like a commie. So no one's going to take him seriously because Chase is, like it or not, like kind of like a product of the regime. Like, he really identifies with this group that has been propped up by the regime, that's forced on us. It's in our movies, our culture, our music. It's everywhere. It's like, or hey, just wait, in like 3 days, we're about to witness this. It's going to go crazy in June. Every corporation is going to like freak out for the pride flag, and across America, every bank, the Defense Department, they're going to put out all this stuff because it's going to be Pride Month. And so people just are not going to associate with that. Cultural issues really do matter to people. It's a huge deal to a lot of people. There is no way I could toad my parents right now and be like, you should seriously look at the Libertarian Party. Like, they would laugh at me. They would literally call me gay. Like, they would be like, what? They would be like, do you have something to tell us? Like, what is this? Like, they would laugh at me, and they should. And I don't know what it is, but I saw a few people on Twitter that kept saying like, who cares what, if he's gay or if he has a pride flag, it's all about his policies. And it's like, I know, but perception is reality to people. And that is just, it's just an instant turn.
It's not that he's just gay. It's that he's like loud and proud about it. Like, I'm sure there's probably gay people that we know that are gay, and like, you would never even know. I mean, I've worked with people like that, but like, when you're running around in the pride flag and you're talking about gay and trans rights, which, once again, nobody can ever explain what the difference between women's rights men's rights, trans rights, all these different people's rights. No, people, first of all, rights don't really exist. As much as people don't want to like this, this is kind of something arbitrary that we all kind of agree upon, that we're not going to violate these rules, right? But that being said, when you start going on about each individual group's rights, then okay, well, why does this one group have rights that this other group doesn't? Like, we're getting into pretty retarded territory here that just isn't productive to anything. And once again, people who are going to be a little bit more freedom-minded typically don't like this kind of shit, you know? So I don't know. It's bad optics all the way around. Like you said, type of perceptions of reality. Let me get the super chat and I'll throw it back over to you guys. Thank you for the $9.99 super chat. And I appreciate the penny off, because if it were $10, I'd have to give you two heartfelt fuck yous for the $5 super chat and have to talk about the cuck article, which, if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, just remember Jack Murphy. The only question is, what does the culture you're defending look like, whether that culture is more diverse? Again, that I think was what the MC tried to do, but with MAGA branding. I think that, like, what the LPMC did try to do is they tried to pander a lot to more of the MAGA base, which is understandable because they're disaffected with what's going on right now. But as I've tried to link up with a little bit more, and I'm having somebody on my show next week who's a little bit more of a progressive, I think that there's a whole anti-war dissident left coalition that is looking for a home. And I really do think you could get those people into libertarianism because they see a lot of the same issues. And that's like a very, very large group that I just think doesn't get its due respect, if you will. Pat, I know you know a lot of the people that I'm talking about, but it's someone, I think it's just a group that goes unnoticed a lot.
Yeah, man, I agree. I don't know exactly what Conrail's getting at in this question. Do you?
No, I'm not following 100%.
But sorry, bro. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe we can use this to rally against Chase and try to take over the LP again. I don't know. I mean, they're still in control of it, so I guess, I don't know. But what Typo said, I don't know if there is a Mises caucus after Heist steps down. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, do you guys think libertarianism as a brand and ideology is essentially soiled now? And, like, is it worth continuing to even use that terminology, or do you think it's completely tarnished?
I think you have to. I don't know. I think we're all wedded to the term libertarian. It's just the way it is. Just sure. Like the LP is going to exist. Mm-hmm. But it is soiled for now. Yes.
Sure. Okay. Typo.
I mean, I don't know. I probably wouldn't be too connected to the term libertarian as of lately. I kind of been thinking about that more even before all this. So this isn't really a result of what happened at the convention. I was already kind of thinking that, but I'm not exactly sure. I think there is important to, like, try to gatekeep your terms, because once you cede it to the left, there's no getting it back. But I just don't know if it's like, now is there a time you ever admit that they took it over and now, you know, you're just gonna get lumped in with them. I don't know. I'm not the one to decide that or whatever. I don't really exactly use the term libertarian or identify with that or talk about libertarianism specifically. But it does, at least for now. I mean, this, like Pat says, it's early, so I'm not trying to be over hyperbolic, but I mean, at least for me, it'd be rough for me in public settings to be like, hey, I'm a libertarian now. So I don't know. I would kind of at least put it away for a little bit and see what happens. I mean, I don't know. I don't know all the answers for this one, but it is a big loss, and it does just like. I mean, this is going to be one of those things that they pull up, even if, like, say 2028, you get a good candidate in there, you're going to see memes of Chase, Joe Jorgensen, Gary Johnson, the naked man. Now, like, Chase is now added into the meme fuel to rag on libertarians, unfortunately. And I mean, it's just not a good track record the last couple election cycles for libertarians. And I don't know. I don't know if it's salvageable. I'm not the big guy at top to decide this stuff. But if you're connected to it, use it. Maybe try to rebrand it yourself. And it's all about like what people can do. I mean, you know, you can take any term and, you know, like, for example, like this is kind of a little off topic, I guess, but Native American used to represent the Americans that were here, like the Anglo-Americans that were here. This was a term coined in like 1850. And it was actually a representation of the Anglo-Americans that were against the Irish immigrants that were coming here and German immigrants that were coming here. And they were the Native Americans. Kind of funny, but I don't know exactly when. I think it was like the 60s or something. Then the term got picked up to represent the Indians, which is now called the Native Americans today. And so it's all about like, how much do you care about the term? Is it something that's important to you? Can you adopt to something else? I mean, maybe something new can be fun if it can pick up and you can make it cool and it could attract a lot of people. You know, a lot of people, I think what's going to happen though, I think there's going to be a lot more libertarians that identify with more of the paleo conservative side of this movement.
I think one thing to point out is that the whole like cosmopolitan libertarianism thing has been a part of the movement though since the very beginning, since the Rothbard Cato Institute split. And yeah. So I don't disagree with you, Typo, but I think that like this is not an old fight. I think that we've seen this go back and forth for decades now, but I largely am also kind of tired with the term libertarian. And like, I'm just not really concerned with that part of who I am and that part of my content anymore. Like I'm so tired, dude. I'm tired. I'm tired of fighting about inane theory and bullshit. Like I have three kids now and I didn't have three kids when we started in this space, Typo. I mean, like, Christ, I've known you now in this space for a long fucking time, and we've grown up and gotten older, and like the things we care about are different. And I'm fucking tired of the scene. I'm not as much tired of like the theory per se, but I just don't care about it that much. I don't know.
You don't care to argue with it. I don't. People, I mean, like the people.
It's still the guiding star, but I'm not going to pretend that it has much practical application in my life or politics as they exist right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm more like, sorry to interrupt. I'm more just go off instinct now. Like, I don't think like, how does this work with libertarian theory? I just look at something that's like, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that associated with me. And if that, you know, makes me not libertarian to people, then like, whatever, I'm done. I don't care anymore. Yeah. Call me whatever you want to call me. Like, I get called Nazi sometimes. I get called communist sometimes.
Jewish.
I get it all. Jewish. Yeah. I get called Jewish. I got called Jewish like the other day and I was like, okay, dude, whatever. I wish I had power, but you know, I didn't.
Part of it is that like, I think people are still, there's still people coming into the movement and there's still people that are at that point in their journey. That they're, you know, and it's like, I'm just whatever the fuck now.
Yeah. What are you like in your early 30s?
Yeah. I just turned 30 last year.
I just turned 30 like 4 days ago. You're almost 30. Like, I think, you know, when you're, I don't know. I think this is true for a lot of people. I know I hated it when I was like 27, 26. I would be like, libertarian's not a phase. It's not, I'll be libertarian forever. And then you get in your 30s, you know, you buy a house, you have kids like Pat, and you're like, who gives a shit? Like, who gives a shit about, I care if like we're winning. Like if you do that under the Republican banner, I don't give a fuck. Like,
yeah.
So I guess one other question I wanted to ask, and yeah, I'll be 30 in November, Kevin, y'all are young. So
it's
yeah,
true. Right.
You guys are a few months older than me, but, do you guys think that maybe we might be overreacting, and maybe just me, but, this might just be a Twitter shit storm that's going to breeze over. Cause like I said earlier, you know, Twitter followings and engagement doesn't always it almost certainly does not cross over into real world activism. Do you think that we're just kind of seeing people acting a fool on Twitter and this is going to kind of get shoved into the memory hole? Like, I feel like it's still going to be memed, but do you think like we're just getting an overreaction right now?
Not till after November. I don't think that'll die down, to be honest.
Okay.
It's going to be a wild ride, man. I think. I think, though, that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like people are getting really upset, and it's becoming people are deflated. But that carries on into actually snowballing more into perception.
Like you talked about, like the early days of like the Cato Rothbard split. Now it's like, you know, the Mises liberal project split, whatever the opposition, I don't know what the opposition's called, but like whatever. And it's going to carry on, and there's, you know, people are going to remember this stuff, and, you know, it's going to build blood feuds for the future that are going to last 20 fucking years, man.
Yeah. Yeah, Conrail says, I'm still tempted to leave Twitter permanently. I uninstalled it from my phone, and I put a lock on my work computer so that it freezes me out of any social media from like 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it, like, there's no way to break it either. So That's going to save me. It's going to make me so much more money this year. Mm.
Yeah, I think I need to do something similar because, it's... Ryan Stone had put it this way on my show, or not my show, on his show. He said that like Twitter's like having a phone book in your pocket, essentially, where like you can just get up and hit up people all the time. It's very convenient in that regards, but I mean, it will be a total time sink if you let it. And I mean, I don't think there's a single person that's been on this podcast that would say otherwise, because I'm sure we've all spent too much time doom scrolling and just trying to fire off bomb tweets, you know?
Dopamine addiction.
Yeah. It's so true. It's one thing. It's so annoying because it is true that I think Twitter is where narratives are born. Like, I think narratives and like how you phrase things and like that can really pick up, and like people can pick up on that. It can spread like wildfire. Like just the whole Israel Palestine thing, like Jackson Hinkle blew up over that. Like there's a couple other guys that blew up over that. So if you're really nailing down on a specific issue, like you can really catch wind and make something of yourself. And that's not true. That's more for your own personal gain out of it. But there is a truth where you're like, you're trying to spend too much time thinking about making the good tweet or phrasing things the right way that a lot of times you get sucked into it. And then probably for most of us, you don't get a lot of the, you don't get rewarded as much for it. And I think that's, you know, when everyone has a voice, there's a lot of garbage out there. And I probably contribute to that a lot myself. Like, I'm not even saying that I'm like an inspirational tweet or anything, but it really is addicting. And I've really tried to, I've cut out most of other social medias, but Twitter still has me.
Same.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty, my most viral tweets, I think, were either when I made fun of Tim Pool, whenever I made fun of John Zerka, or joked about women. And that was the prefrontal cortex one that got 250,000 views and ended up on iFunny. And I've had quite a few I don't know that those are necessarily viral, but they definitely got a lot of traction. So Conrail's comment, he said, also my whole comment on culture was referring specifically whether right-wing culture is a way to go for a libertarian movement or whether something beyond that. I've always considered myself more of a socially conservative libertarian, and I used to lean into that a lot more. I don't really say it as much anymore, but as I talk to more and more people, I'm like, holy shit, maybe I am a little bit of a prude. Like, I'm loud and rowdy, but like, I think everybody knows, you know, I never smoked or anything like that. I've been with my wife for 5 years, and you know, it's some of the stuff we were talking about in our one group chat today kind of made me a little bit aware of my position a little bit.
Yeah, more. I didn't realize, like, I kind of lean into it now, but I didn't realize I was more culturally right wing until someone told me at Childeberg. They're like, why do you cater to right wing people? I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And like, I didn't know I was even doing that. I just thought I was being a libertarian. Like, I don't know. Like, I thought I was just appealing to people like me. But then I kind of figured it out that, you know, when you're a small town kid, parents from mostly a godly family, you're like, oh, okay, I'm very different from a lot of people in this world.
Yeah, honestly. Well, I think we found a pretty good natural stopping point. we'll just kind of have to keep updating and kind of keep this conversation going as it unfolds. I don't know what to expect over the next 6 months. And with the way that shit goes anymore, I mean, you just don't know. There's no way of knowing how things are going to lay out in the future. And I'm interested to see kind of what happens for the movement and beyond. A lot of people seem excited. A lot of people seem kind of bummed out. But, I mean, we don't really have any way of knowing until it all plays out. So, that being said, where can we keep up with everybody here to continue this conversation? Typo.
Oh, biting the bullet. Again, I'm addicted to Twitter. So, at The Real Typo, you can find me there. I'm pretty much on tweeting every night, sometimes at work at lunch, which I shouldn't do, but I do it. But at The Real Typo, and then biting the bullets on all the favorite podcatchers, and we'll definitely have an episode out next week for you guys.
Cool. Pat?
Yeah, man. VitalDissent.com, Libertarian Institute /donate if you like what we do over there. I really need to get back to doing shit. Like, I'm so ADD. Like, I pick up too many things at once and I pour, you know, I get really intense about it for a few weeks and that just fucking sucks because there's always something else that comes up. So I apologize for that, but I really want to get part two of my Oppenheimer documentary out now that no one cares about it anymore.
it was good. You should do it, man.
It was killer. Yeah.
I think what I want to do is just like only do that long form stuff and then just not.
That'd be awesome.
Episode. So fills a hole, but yeah, well, it was good to see you, Typo, and Adam, too. And Kyle, I see you more often, but it's always good to see you, too.
Of course. All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody. One more time, shout out to the channel members. $2.99 a month if you want to join. You can see all of the performances by Common Crown that I have. And then I'm going to try to release early videos. And I think what I'm going to start doing is if guests choose to hang out afterwards, maybe I'll send out a link to the members and, you know, you guys can join and shoot the shit with us after after we get off air, because I usually end up just shooting the shit with all my friends afterwards. So just, I highly recommend you guys check that out. And I'll put that link for the GoFundMe for Rock for Life in the description below so you guys can go donate if you feel so kind. And if you guys don't got anything else, we'll wrap there.
I'm good, man.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Well, glad you guys could do this on short notice. And fuck Adam for leaving. But no. Thank you all, you guys. And until next time, take care.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.